so we can all realize just the fact of one person, one human being in our lifetime that has developed from the kind of ordinary kind of being from Northeast Thailand, a quite remote area that most of us probably never even heard of before we came across Ajahn Chah. And just the power of his practice and the effect that that had on so many human beings in Thailand and even around the world. And he, his teaching was awakening, and yet he could use tradition, use a very kind of orthodox style of a form of Vinaya, and staying within the traditional form of as we see it in the Pali scriptures, and yet within this tradition that's been handed down through the many centuries, it's come to life through his awareness, and through an awakened one. His very presence was alive, and he was fully conscious in the things that, and the effect was enormous compassion and a joyousness that comes from the empty mind, from the selfless being. So we sometimes, we can see, sometimes we put down traditions here in the United States, so easy to see these things as old-fashioned or museum pieces or whatever, because we're such a new country ourselves, and so we oftentimes mistrust tradition. And so it's easy to find fault with a tradition because they are imperfect like every other convention. So this Theravada tradition that I happen to get into almost by accident, because my first interest lay with Zen Buddhism, not with Theravada. And due to circumstances of just being in Southeast Asia, I came into the Theravada tradition, which I had assumed much of the Zen literature that was common in the 1950s would oftentimes disparage Theravada, call it Hinayana Buddhism, refer to arahants as selfish, and even one scholar said that Theravada Buddhism had not produced any enlightened beings since the time of the Buddha, and it's a total waste of time. So having this kind of information, I decided, well, I won't bother with this one. And the Zen thing seemed much more glamorous and exciting, and that was what was going on here in the Bay Area back in the early 60s, or late 50s and early 60s. So, much to my surprise, my experience within the Theravada tradition with, in a country like Thailand, because the Westerners who went to Asia to study Theravada would either go to Sri Lanka or Burma. And Thailand, never having been a colony of any European power, it remained a bit kind of separate and remote. And even Thai Buddhism was hardly understood by any Westerner because of the lack of contact and lack of understanding of Thailand itself. So it was during when I went to stay with Ajahn Chah, was because Burma was closed down. Nay Win had taken over, and you couldn't get into Burma if you were a Westerner at all. And then I went to a Sri Lankan monk in Penang, and I said, I'd like to ordain as a monk, but I don't know whether I should go to Sri Lanka or Thailand. And he said, Thailand. Much to my surprise, I thought he'd say Sri Lanka. So then going to Thailand, I started out and just practicing meditation, and eventually came to meet Lungpa Cha. And to me, he represented, you know, like the, you can regard the tradition, the forms that we have, the Dhamma Vinaya and the, what we call Theravada Buddhism, is like a skeleton, you know, it has a structure. But the life comes through the individuals, not through the tradition. And sometimes we can be very critical of traditions, saying they're dead, lifeless, meaningless now, and we want to start new ones or start our own. But to me, I kind of, through my experience with Lungpa Cha, was that he made sense out of this very old tradition. Suddenly it sprang to life. It was real. It was practical. And you could do it. And he was the physical manifestation of that, of a human being who did it, you know. And so, and he wasn't airy fairy or head in the clouds. So many of the stories, he could be quite crude, but also incredibly compassionate and full of life and love, and his boundaries were filling, he could fill out this rather seemingly sterile form that I used to regard as Theravada Buddhism. So then it gave me a real sense of you know, you can't blame the tradition, or it's the people in it, you know, whether you're just a blind follower of tradition and go along with it in a kind of stupid way, or whether you bring life into it. And that life is our own consciousness, isn't it? It's what we give to it, how we use this tradition, and that we have to realize for ourselves. Like Lungpa Cha was pointed that out. It wasn't, I couldn't copy and just be a devoted follower of him, and hope that by doing everything like he did, I would somehow, sustain this tradition in some way and get enlightened. But it was the confidence he gave me to trust, and to awaken and to be myself. Not, that isn't being, someone who, is egotistical, but someone who's willing to be awake and really put forth the effort, and using one's life, one's karma, one's situation for this, this continuity in awakenedness, in awareness. I went to a Sangha meeting in, last June in Wat Pa Pong. And when I went to stay with Ajahn Chah in 1967, there were only 22 of us there in the monastery. And in June in 2000, there were over 500 monks assembled for this Sangha meeting. And there's so many branch monasteries, 180 or something like that. And then during this meeting, we had 2 days of meetings, and I usually detest meetings of any sort. You know, I'm a really recluse by nature, and so just the word meeting puts me off. And I think I'm a number 5 in the Enneagram, you know, kind of. And that's the one characteristic I identify with. And and especially these Sangha meetings where they're speaking in Thai all the time, and oftentimes they're just rattling on about things that are so utterly boring. So they brought up a big problem for the Sangha in Thailand, 500 monks there for the Sangha Wat Pa Pong, about whether we could allow this certain kind of sweet in the afternoon, which has a, it's called Copico, and it's coffee sweet, but it has 2% dairy cream in it. And so this was the controversy. Whether 2% dairy cream was going to be allowed by... And I say, may our problems never get any worse than this. Then, after much discussion about this silly thing, they brought up another one about Moonities, and this was foundations. And so many of the monks, like in Wat Pa Pong Sang, you've got some who are very learned and clever, well educated. You've got a lot that have are not well educated at all. They don't know anything other than maybe their life in Ubon from the farm. So this foundation is a kind of new idea, and the internet and computer and all this stuff is something beyond their comprehension. So it's become apparent now that we've had to protect Ajahn Chah's name, because it's being used kind of all over the place to do anything, and there's no kind of legal right to stop it. So this was brought to the attention of the Sangha there, and they all voiced various opinions. And I remember years ago, when one time Lungpa Cha was away for several months, and the food, no one was coming to the monastery bringing any food. And so we were all suffering from malnutrition. And the nuns would glean the forest there, pick up leaves or roots, and pretty soon we were running out of leaves and roots. And I had severe malnutrition at the time. And so we, Ajahn Liam and I decided we'd go Bindabat to Ban Bunwai. This was before Wat Nanachat, because the villagers there were very generous. They gave food too. They didn't just give rice. So, and that was quite a long Bindabat. So Ajahn Liam and I used to get up early and go all the way to Bunwai and back. We were so desperate for something to eat. When Lungpa Cha came back, he was really disgusted with the lay people, and he let them know it. He said, you know, there are, you know, 50, 60 monks here and about the same amount of nuns, and you only come when I'm here. And he said, I'm only one monk. I don't need your food. And he really, and in Thai people, I think, like to be scolded. So, and he scolded them. And so then there was this idea that you can, we can set up a fund, and kind of people would donate money to set up an emergency fund if we ran out of food. And he said, I don't want any munities. And he says, it has to come through faith. So the word munity was associated with that. And it did. After that, there was no problem. Now the food is abundant at Wat Pa Pong, and they've got really, it's full monastery. But this word munity seemed to stick in the mind, and Lungpa Cha said no munities. So they had this argument going on about munities or foundations, and finally they came around to that, and then there was some hot views about this and some harsh words, and they can be quite aggressive and confrontational in these Sangha meetings. And then at the end, somehow it ended. The Sangha meeting ended on the afternoon of the second day. And somehow everything seemed to drop, all the anger and strong views. And we all asked forgiveness from each other and paid respect to the Buddha, Dhamma Sangha, and to the effigy of Lungpa Cha. And it's such a brilliant ending, you know, there's a kind of 500 monks, and in various ages. Most of them I don't know anymore. My generation, there are not many left. And so, but yet to see the effect of what they call samarki in the Thai mentality, how even through harsh words and various opinions and different views and all that, underlying that is a unity. And I think this is something we need to learn very much in the West, because we tend to be so caught in our views and opinions, and we don't have an underlying unity to refer to. So in the practice of the Dhamma, isn't it, Lungpa Cha wasn't giving us views and opinions, but even all all the Lungpa Cha stories, all the, his life itself, underneath was giving us all a confidence in the unspoken unity of our humanity. And this reference to this is very much, you know, what he inferred through his own life. So And I feel quite positive about the Sangha that now carries on, even though it can go into various stages of being boring and dead and perfunctory, and people are quoting Ajahn Chah all the time, and their various views about what Lumpa Cha said and what he taught, and others say, no, he didn't teach that, and other monks say, I knew Lumpa Cha, I lived near him, and others will say, I knew him better than you did. Yeah, and it's the most ridiculous argument. But underneath that, we still seem to hold together. And I find that quite wonderful to see, because I see that even at this stage of human development on this planet, isn't it? It's frightening, because we don't know where our unity is. Is it? We're so caught up in our own views, opinions, our own positions, our own attachments, and we have no way of seeing beyond them. And as you can see over these past 2 days, Lingpa Cha was always pointing us beyond the limitations of ourself. So I offer this as my final reflection.